All right, we're back, and the long-awaited, much-promised assessment through PBL.
Been working on it a while. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So I'm Andy Groom, and I'm going to kick us off with a little quote to get started, as is tradition. This is from a girl called Claire. I remember for the first time that a grading rubric was attached to a piece of my writing. Suddenly, all the joy was taken away.
Yeah, that is so true. Just, I like it. Nice. And kind of like, sometimes it feels like that a little bit with jobs, like doing something you love, but then when you do it as a job, you stop liking it.
Yeah. One of my little, I guess, mantras for the moment is like trying to find the joy in those moments that you're just like, well, this is a real teachery job that I have to do right now. And it's like, well, what can I take out of this to give myself a little bit of a feeling of enjoyment rather than like, oh, this job again.
Yeah, so, nice. Yeah. And it's working?
So far, so good.
Yeah, cool. I like it. Yeah, great start. Hey, well, we're doing, leads us right into the topic of today's thing, so assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And all specifically around project-based learning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of guest interviewees that we've brought in as well, just for their advice. So a couple of big hitters in the NAU world, at least. So we got Luke Dyer coming in.
Yeah, okay.
Well, just a short interview, and that will feed into probably something a little longer we're going to do later on. And Luke is at BIS Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And we also got Tom Collins, not named after the drink, but just very conveniently matching. And he's coming to us from Chicago.
Chicago! You're out of there!
From our non-English school in Chicago. Yeah. So that'll be really cool.
Yeah, and they're both people that I've met, albeit briefly, but they're both really interesting and passionate educators. So I'm excited to hear more about what they have to say on assessment.
Yeah, awesome. All right, Andy, so we told the listeners that we're delving into assessment of project-based learning.
Yep. Okay.
So it probably makes sense at this point to just unpack quickly what project-based learning is.
Yes.
We thought that we had done an episode on it. We had not. So we just explain that. And I think it's a really good point in time to point out that if it seems as if we don't really know what's going on here, it's because we probably don't, and we have talked about this, I think, on air as well as off air extensively. We do not want to come across as the experts and that we're just sort of spouting knowledge at everybody. We are generally trying to figure this stuff out ourselves, right?
Yeah, and it's something that that whole process I've come to really enjoy, and even see growth in myself just by the conversations that we have behind the scenes, on air as well. And I think this particular episode is going to be the most challenging because it's such a big thing, this assessment, and the idea of like, how do we assess what we actually want to assess? And so piecing those bits together has been a challenge, but it's like...
That's why we're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
definitely. Nice. All right, so then what is project-based learning? What is it to you?
So I spent a little bit of time the previous year, bought a book on Kindle about it, and then explored a resource online, BIE, which I think is Buck Institute of Education. And basically for me, it's this whole idea that things that the students are working on, that needs to be in a real life context.
Sure.
It needs to be put into a situation where they can see that they're going to be using their skills along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process that they'll work towards a final product, of course, but it's our job as the teachers to sort of guide them along that process and see where they are and what they need as they go forward.
Yeah, nice. Well, someone that I've worked with on project-based learning within Nord Anglia, so Mark Orwiding, who is one of the lead, he's the director of curriculum for the whole company, but he also is very involved in the our STEAM program with MIT. And so one way he's put it to me, which made a lot of sense, is just the distinguishing project-based learning from just projects,
okay,
or project work.
Yeah.
Right. And so in the traditional model of a project is, you teach kids all this stuff, right, in your class, and then at the end you ask them to do some kind of project to prove that they figured it out or they understand what you were talking about.
Okay, right? So sort of like the front loading of information before, and then you do the thing. Okay,
exactly.
Yep.
Right. But it's different from project-based learning, because in a project-based learning unit, the project starts on day one, mm-hmm, right, and they know what they're supposed to be doing, and in order for them to achieve this project, they are going to independently realize that, oh, I need to learn this piece of knowledge, yeah, or this little concept or this little skill in order to do the next step.
Yeah.
And so all the way through it, you're giving them a reason to have to learn.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, you know, solves that age old problem of like, when are we ever going to need this thing, right? Like right now, this is when you're going to need it.
Yeah.
And you're putting it straight into practice, which really sort of strengthens that, the learning within your brain.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think you see a higher engagement with the student in the content or the skills that you're trying to teach, like you're saying, because of that. And it's reflected in our own lives, for simple things like planning a holiday or starting a podcast or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, I don't need this. Oh, now I need this, so I'm going to use it.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Definitely. Really nice. And, you know, we've talked about student agency before.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, because in a project-based learning, students got some kind of a choice, right? And also they feel like they're doing this real project that's going to affect the world.
Yeah.
Right. So there's your meaning as well, which really helps to get the kids engaged. So
cool.
All right. Well, that's our overview.
Yeah.
Cool. Crushed it.
Yeah. Well done.
All right. Cool. Now, how do we want to do this thing?
I think like it might be nice to try and frame this maybe double episode with some questions that we're going to try and get to the bottom to, maybe successfully, maybe not successfully.
Yeah.
And I sort of took a little bit more of a look at a mathematician called Joe Bowler,
mm-hmm,
which we've been trying to use as inspiration for our mathematics program. And a couple of things came out at me, and one of them was this whole idea of, should a single letter or grade or number be the judge of a student's worth? So just a little something to think about when we are assessing, like, is that who they become, a number, to them and to the people around them, I guess?
Yeah, I look forward to trying to answer that.
Yeah. And then maybe as well, who is this assessment for? Is it for the school? Is it for the teacher? Is it for the parents? Is it for the student themselves? So a little dabble with that maybe.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, and actually I'm on board with that idea as well. And I was thinking similar lines is, if, you know, how do we get the students on board with the project-based learning? Mm-hmm. When a lot of them, you know, do really care about the grade and it is important to them that they know exactly what they need to do to be successful or to get an A or whatever it is.
Yeah.
How do we get them to really buy into the spirit of project-based learning?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tough one. And the other question that I am really looking forward to kind of approaching is, you know, if people are a little bit hesitant to get into PBL, then... you know, maybe the one way they could look at it is, you know, if project-based learning is some kind of vehicle of making your content a little bit more approachable, mm-hmm, and a bit more enjoyable for kids, then, you know, maybe nothing much actually changes. Maybe you just assess that in the similar ways as you might have anyway.
Oh, yeah. So trying to find the easy way in, or, you know, like the making it not such a bigger jump as you may initially think it is.
Right, and maybe just also making, I don't necessarily want that assessment thing to be like the reason people don't give it a go.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, it's too hard.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay, that's nice. So that's what we got planned for the next little while. So might be a good time to take a break before we crack on with it.
Cool. Welcome back, Andy.
Oh, we're back. Okay, so I tasked myself with having a look at Joe Bowler for the theory. I thought it would be interesting to take a curriculum era of mathematics.
Yep.
And then have a look at what she's saying about assessment, and then trying to think about, well, what is this? How does this match with what I know so far about project-based learning and assessment during those things?
Sure.
It was a fascinating read, and I got really excited about some ideas, really challenged by some ideas as well. And one of the things that came through was this whole idea that assessment can be a damaging thing, where students see themselves as a grade, as the quote sort of suggested at the start.
Yeah, right.
If you move away from like test assessment and move more towards feedback assessment, then it starts building the self-efficacy of the student. They're starting to see themselves as a learner rather than a grade. And so it was based around feedback a lot of the time. So less scores and more feedback on where they can go with their mathematical learning.
Mm-hmm.
So can you see any nice little links there?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I guess that's what one of my questions was, is about kids. So, and I hadn't really thought of what I in particular was thinking about is the kids that like getting grades,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they might, project-based learning might not necessarily give them, or the best way of assessing that is not going to be through a grade because it's not standardized, right? Mm. The point is that every kid's working on something meaningful and something unique and different. Yep. And so, you know, standardizing just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what sounds like you're bringing up from Joe Boller's book is, you know, the other side is, what about the kids that are really uncomfortable with grades? I suppose there's just as many. I think in our particular school, you know, our kids are fairly academic and they, you know, and also I guess the Asian culture as well, you know, the grade is very important. So I feel like it's more the other way, but there's absolutely both sides of that coin.
Okay, but that's a good point, which is sort of addressed a little bit in this book, is that there are some students who are operating at A level,
mm-hmm.
and then they get an F, or then they get a D. And then it talks about almost the psychological impact on those students when they go from being this highly successful student in their own eyes, based on their grade, to someone who is an F and not an A or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, I think it's fantastic that our students are very academic and they treasure becoming better students, but it's also about, the grade doesn't mean that you're a good student. It's the approach to your work and it's the knowledge of where you are as a learner, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's linking into something I've been reading recently, some work of Louise Porter,
mm-hmm.
and she was talking about the way that we kind of, you know, in it's the comparison of like praise versus acknowledgement with kids, and when you kind of teach kids from a young age and judge them against other people, even though you don't really realize it, but when you say something like, you know, you're the best jumper in the world, or you're the best little girl in the world, or whatever, you're actually making a comparison for them. And then when they come to school, they realize that they're not actually the best, right?
Not the best little girl.
Yeah, right? And there are people who are better than them. There are people at all ends of the spectrum. And they realize that it shatters their identity because they've built their identity on these comments that you've made to them, right? And I feel like that's what you're describing with these kids, mm-hmm. that, you know, their identity is, I'm an A. I'm a straight A student. Yep. That's like who I am. And then anything that, like, you can just, you know, crush them.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe that also comes into that, just going a bit free form on our usual structure, but maybe that can link into the haters part as well. And when we're talking about assessment in terms of looking at skills and looking at things outside of content, where it's easy to give those grades, is maybe that's a difficult thing for parents to sort of embrace as well, that but this isn't the way that I was assessed, so I'm finding it really hard to understand where my child's at or how to compare them against the rest of the class to find out if my child is above average or below average.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think that actually also teachers can suffer from that just as much as a parent can. So if you're a parent of your child, you know, I mean, I guess you've got your rose colored glasses on, but yep. you know a lot about where your kid's at, right? Like,
yeah,
you and I can understand the reason why the parents would want that kind of like validation of like, okay, but where is she at? Like, are they better than all the other kids? Are they the same as the other kids? But you kind of actually know a lot about them. And even as a teacher, you generally know where all your kids are at.
Yeah.
But you're still always searching for some way of kind of proving it and having evidence for it and stuff, right? Like, so it's similar, same ballpark, I think.
Yeah, and I like the way that you're starting to talk, and which we'll get into more about, is like proving where the student is at and finding the evidence for where the student is at, which I think is where we'll end up going with this conversation. Mm-hmm. But so what about you? Did you have a little peek at some theory out there?
Yeah, I did. Picked up a book off the shelf, one of my faves, Steam Makers by mm-hmm. J.C. Maslach. And I was just flicking through some of the things that she talks about with assessment. And I kind of noticed a few different trends, some that I'm quite good at and some that I don't do enough of. Yeah. But and then we discussed this offline as well. But I think where we're at is there are kind of three sort of aspects that you might want to assess in a project-based learning.
Okay.
Firstly, being like the content and the concept, which is probably a bit more like what most classrooms are assessing generally, right? That's the kind of standard stuff. Then also the soft skills that come into that. So, you know, collaboration is always going to be a big one. Communication, those kind of things, which are coming more and more into classrooms. And then the one that I probably do more of is the technical skills.
Yeah.
So often in the project-based learning, you're asking kids to create something. So there might be a making aspect to that, or, you know, some kind of product or presentation or... yeah, some kind of outcome, and you know, you might want to assess those skills too.
Okay, well, just something that I noticed when you're talking, that a process that I went through as well, I think, is that I think it's really important for like people to know that you're never the finished article, right? Like mm-hmm. when you do explore new things, you're like, oh man, I'm already doing this. This is really exciting. But equally, you're spotting those things. You're like, oh, do you know what? I've got a bit of work to do in this area, and I think that's how I felt looking at Jo Bowler as well, her mathematical mindsets. And it was just that, oh, yeah, okay, so I'm on the right track, and this is the next little thing, the next step that I can take to making assessment in the classroom through PBL or just in the curriculum areas and take that forward.
Well, that's nice. I mean, and that's probably maybe something that our feedback should model as well, mm-hmm. and hopefully our students can... give themselves as kind of feedback and encouragement is like what you've just said then is you've given yourself kind of a some goods and some even betters if kind of thing, right?
Okay.
So, you know, which motivates you but also tells you what to do next. So, nice.
Yeah, nice one. Okay.
All right, let's have a quick break and then we'll try and delve a little deeper into some of these questions we've got.
Okay. Okay, I'm greedy. I want all my answers answered first. So I'm going to crack on with this idea of, is the assessment for the school, the teacher, the parent, or the student? Yours, please.
Well, first and foremost, the student, right?
Yeah.
That's obvious. I mean, it's obvious and it's kind of not obvious because it's one of those... things that like principles of like the teaching role, and yet we get caught up in the practicalities and the logistics and all the other stuff that comes behind it. But yeah, if we're thinking about what we're supposed to be doing, of course it's for the student.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The student first and foremost, and if we are assessing really well as we go along the learning journey, and then it will give us a better understanding of the student, which means that we can use that for the other stakeholders mm-hmm. and it will just make that I think it will make it more purposeful for them. And one of the we've got an interview coming up, is that right?
Yeah,
cool. And and I think that's going to lead us in nicely to a discussion about, well, what sort of assessment in project-based learning, if we know it's for the student, what are some ideas that we can actually use during project-based learning?
Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess the point behind your question, right, is that depending on who we want the, depending on who we're collecting this information for depends on how you are going to assess it, right?
Yeah.
So nice. The parent probably wants an easy to understand number, perhaps.
Yeah.
The school, you know, may also want that kind of, or, and they're going to want longitudinal data, right? Like they're going to want to kind of see the track trends across time, right? So it's a different kind of thing, but the student needs tips on what they're going to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. So the data you collect is totally different.
Yeah.
For each of those people, and so I guess what we're looking for here is the best way for the kid to be able to move forward.
Yeah, nice. I like the way that you put that. That's definitely put my thinking in a clearer way, which is nice.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah. So I did sit down during the holidays with Luke, who is in Ho Chi Minh City, and he had some good things to say about it. So should we go straight to him?
Yep.
Cool.
Let's.
Assessment of project-based learning skills. Ooh, that's a tricky one. Hard to show that learning there. I found one really successful way, and it wouldn't work all the time, but it's quite good to bring up every once in a while, is I took my learning criteria, the success points I was taking from the process and the project, and I put them onto a rubric, put that on a Google Sheet, and put that up on the big screen. And had that with the SDM&E for support, developing, meeting, and exceeding. Put the children into groups, and they had to crowdsource their success criteria. What teamwork looked like at a support, developing, meeting, and exceeding level. And they had to write statements for each of these. Now, what happened then is when they were doing that, some children began looking at other groups, and it was that, I guess, the great stealing of ideas that we do all the time. A certain language was used, which caused other children to improve their, refine their definitions to make it a little bit better. And it allowed us to look at that process from the student's point of view. They noticed that what some students thought was exceeding was what they were already doing halfway through the process, and that caused debate and discussion, and they had to rejig where they thought each of those statements would be, and it ended up that every group was, by the end of the project, what we thought was exceeding at the start, that got moved almost two bands down, and they exceeded what their mid-project idea of what was going to be by phenomenal. That was great.
So I'll start off just by apologizing for the strange location that audio was recorded in. You may have spotted the airport announcers in the background, but very successful interview nonetheless. So what did you think of that, Andy?
It was really interesting. There's a few things that I sort of took away from that, and one of those ideas was that even though that this was a chance for the students to develop their own success criteria, it was also a chance for them to use some of their literacy skills as well, and the way that they're interacting with each other and trying to convince each other of their own opinions, backing it up with evidence. So this development of the success criteria was actually quite a rich task in itself, from what I heard, which is really nice.
Yeah, definitely. I also am not surprised to hear that he said that, you know, when the students designed it themselves, they actually set, you know, even higher expectations than the teacher did. And I don't know, that sort of sounds like something that would be surprising, but to me, that kind of is like, yeah, that seems right. Like when they really understand what it is that they're being asked to do, they'll be like, oh yeah, I can do that for sure, and have a bit of confidence to like, yeah, let's make it even harder. Let's push the limits there. Okay. That seems like something I would get out of kids.
Yeah, and I just picked up on you saying if it's something that they understand, and I was talking to Bissy, who we've had on the pod before. I was talking to her about success criteria, and she had a really important message that I picked up on, and that it's that this is the development of a student own success criteria is actually your first point of assessment.
Right.
You can look at that assessment, the success criteria, sorry. You can look at that and you can see the kids who totally understand the task that they're doing, or those kids who are like, you're actually quite far off here and I'm going to need to support you to develop this a bit more.
Yeah, no, that's a really cool way of thinking about it. It makes a lot of sense. However, one thing that just caught my mind, my eye,
mm-hmm.
is Luke was saying that the collaboration aspect where they were designing and bouncing ideas off each other, and he said the stealing of ideas, which is great.
Yeah.
That is what collaboration is, right?
Yeah.
But if we are, if you look, thinking of the designing of their success criteria as their first assessment, is that something to be a little bit cautious of them, you know, kids not actually writing their own one,
yeah,
but
true.
Pinching the ideas of someone and like kind of putting across this facade that they know what's going on when actually they didn't understand the task. They just yeah. kind of worked okay. within a group and hid away.
Cool. I'd love to bring this back to my classroom now.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we have just started a project-based learning PBL unit on the brain, and we want them to create an interactive model of the brain. And the first thing that we did was we set it up as a grasps task, so like a real life situation. And the first thing that we did was actually got them to define what the parameters were.
Can I just jump in? Because I know we always are worried about throwing out the acronyms that some of our listeners don't quite get. So the grasps task is a way of presenting a context to kids, like for what their task is going to be, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And it's about setting so goal, role, audience.
Yeah, is nice.
Go and fish
situation, the product,
yep.
and then the S is actually the success criteria in itself, which we are asking our students to create. But before we felt like they could do that, we spent some time unpacking, defining what the parameters were and mm-hmm. What they were trying to achieve. Which was done collaboratively. Like we worked on that as a class in groups and then brought it together as a class. And now I think our next step after this conversation, which is fantastic,
mm-hmm.
It's changing my practice in my class, maybe getting them to go away and come up with their own success criteria to begin with.
Yep.
And then bringing them into maybe like a pair and a three or a four afterwards. So you can see what they did by themselves,
sure.
but then giving them that support and maybe elevating their own thinking by talking to other people.
Outstanding.
Maybe, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. It might be fraught with difficulties, but hopefully that'll try and deal with that possible scenario where you're not actually finding out what a particular student knows, but rather what the whole class knows, I guess.
Awesome. All right, cool. And it actually also might give you a good basis for pointing out to kids, see, this is the power of working with teams. Like, look, mm-hmm. here's what you brought to the table at the start of class
yeah.
that you wrote by yourself. Here's what you ended up with now.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, I'm imagining that would end up being one of those, you know, the sum of the whole is greater than the parts or whatever, yeah. that kind of thing of like, you know, you each had this much, but now as together you've got this yeah. way better success criteria. So, yeah, cool. All right, well, let's take a quick break and see if we can answer a few more questions.
Okay. Okay, so concluding my greediness, question number two, thank you very much. Should a single letter or number be used to judge a student's worth?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yep, done. No, of course not, right? I don't think there are very many teachers out there or just people in general mm-hmm. who would say yes to yeah. that question, right? And we've already unpacked a little bit about that, you know, whether it's that you're going to crush their identity
yeah.
or whether it's you're kind of destroying all creativity and just, you know, teaching them that they're a number. I mean, there's so many reasons why not,
yeah,
right? But that doesn't necessarily tell us how we should
yeah,
do it, right?
Nice. That's, yeah, well played.
So are you a Sylvester Stallone fan, Andy?
Oh, yeah, I dabbled for sure.
You ever seen a little film out of the 80s, Cliffhanger?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Love that film.
And parodied, of course, in Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
We're going to leave people with a bit of a cliffhanger today. Something Ooh. Fresh for us.
Okay. What is it?
Well, I mean, how do we not do that, basically? Yeah. How do we not measure kids by a grade?
Yeah.
And tying that into a project-based learning, how are we going to do it?
Okay. Goodbye.
That's it. Well, so this is part one of a two-part episode. So next week we're gonna get into some of the ways that we would actually do this.
Cool.